Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. In hour number one, we went to Cincinnati. We caught up with former Titans linebacker Rocky Boyman, who was doing radio in Cincinnati, talking about that Bengals first pick. And now we head down to South Beach. We'll find out what the Dolphins are thinking at five. And Cameron Wolf, who used to cover the Titans, now covers the Dolphins for ESPN and ESPN.com. He is their NFL Nation reporter. Cameron, how you doing?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
Well, it's certainly not dull right now where you are and the team that you're covering, because there's a lot of stuff out there trying to figure out what exactly are the Dolphins going to do and who is their guy. Are they willing to trade up? Can they trade up to get their guy? So how much are you hearing down there with what we can expect tonight with that fifth pick or fourth pick or third pick or whatever they do?
I'm hearing everything, man. It's smokescreen season. Every single day there seems to be a new rumor that somebody heard about something. Here's what I do know. I would be shocked if the Dolphins didn't draft a quarterback in the first round and most likely with their first pick. I know there had been the report about them possibly taking a tackle, and I do expect them to take a tackle with one of their picks today. I just don't think that they'll prioritize that over the quarterback position. So, you know, I think you're going to hear a lot of stuff. You've heard a lot of stuff. You'll continue to hear a lot of stuff from teams trying to get information out to help them, to benefit them, to play a little offense and defense with other teams that may be in front of them or behind them. So I think that's a lot of what's going on here with the Dolphins. And I think ultimately they're going to end up taking a quarterback with their first pick.
They've got the opportunity, as you know, with three first-round picks to really change their franchise moving forward. And they've already done that, really, in the offseason. They've spent a lot of money. They've brought in which looked like some really good players to help them. We thought that they were going to be awful, and as the season went along, I remember us talking to you about whole tanking for Tua and all of that. But they got better, and they looked like a pretty good little team there toward the end of the year, even after trading away a lot of guys. So you think in the end, let's just start with that first pick. They are going to get a quarterback. There's no doubt about it with that first pick in the first
round?
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, I can't say for certainty. I'm not in that room with them, but I would be pretty surprised if they didn't pick a quarterback. Like you mentioned, they're trying to do this rebuild right. They spent a lot of time last offseason cleaning up their salary cap and trading away players like Laremy Tunsil and Minkah Fitzpatrick and Kenny Stills. And I can't imagine that they would do that to trade up for an offensive tackle or even take a tackle at five and roll the dice at quarterback. So I think that you're looking at a situation, and I've said this since the scouting combine, where I still think Tua Tagovailoa is their guy. And I think that, you know, they like Joe Burrow a lot. And I know Adam Schefter came out with the report that they, you know, made an offer to trade up to Cincy. And I know that to be true. I just don't think Cincinnati's trading that pick. So they figure out who their number two quarterback, and I believe that's Tua.
We're talking to Cameron Wolf. Once upon a time, covered the Titans, now covering the Dolphins for ESPN. And so, Cameron, let's maybe take a bigger look at the Dolphins and where they are. They did some really nice things by the end of last season. So where did they make the biggest strides in your mind as they started to win games? And obviously they did the Titans a big solid with a big win in Foxborough on the last day of the season.
Yeah, I think they really gained a lot of players' trust throughout the season. Early in the year, I was in that locker room, and it was very, you know, grim at times. You know, they had just traded away two of their best three players. They were getting embarrassed every week. I think they lost their first two games by 90 combined points, and everybody was having them as the laughing stock of the league. And eventually they went to Josh Rosen in a move that didn't work out. And I think Brian Flores really gained his team's respect when he went back to Ryan Fitzpatrick, a move that didn't really make sense for a rebuilding team, but it made sense for a team that was trying to win, like he said they were. And I think that second half of the year, they got a lot of continuity together. They had players, you know, play above their talent. And I think you really saw really good coaching. And I think if they could take anything out of last year, is that they may have found the right coach. And now they have to get the right players and the right quarterback. And that's what, you know, that's why this draft is so important. They have more draft capital than any other team. And they can really rewrite their franchise with this draft.
How did you try to put together mock drafts for a team that has so many picks. I mean, that's there's so many things they can do. You would almost assume that somewhere in there they're going to wheel and deal. But how did you try to approach it?
Yeah, we do an NFL Nation mock draft on ESPN every year. So I had three picks this year. So I found a way to put on three different suits. It was actually my wife's suggestion to put on three different suits and get set up outside and have the video. So I figured, when's the next time we're going to have three different picks in the draft? So we shot that and had that, sweating outside in the Miami Heat trying to get that all set up. So it was definitely a new deal for me, you know, whether I'm doing the picks for TV or, you know, just like fans, I like to do the mock drafts on a little website where, and you got 14 picks, so that's not a quick mock draft. You got to, you know, that takes you about 30, 45 minutes to go through that mock draft. So it definitely takes a while. So it's just an experience, you know, but I do think they'll will and deal. I do think that there will be some sort of trade up, whether it's at the 5 spot or the 18 spot, because they're not going to bring in 14 rookies and draft 14 rookies. They're going to try to figure out how they can bring a higher talent level of guys into this roster in 2020.
You, one of your tweets is something I've thought of, too, and I think ESPN will really work hard to try to capture this as best they can, and NFL Network as well, but trying to get the emotion. I was very fortunate. Me and my son and one of his friends were invited backstage for part of the first round last year. I got a chance to just watch the families sit in the lounge, and then as they came down the tunnel, all the hugs, and you know, you start thinking about how long they've been working towards this moment. Rocky Boyman just told us his story last hour. None of them will ever forget that moment. And you're talking about that in your tweet, about just the emotion that you see from those families. I hope they can capture that tonight.
Yeah, no, I hope so too. I'm watching ESPN right now, and I know that we have been putting cameras in a lot of the top prospects' homes, and I think that, you know, we'll be able to get to see a lot of them as they're getting the call, as they're seeing their name announced. And yeah, I hope, even though they're not in Vegas, they still are able to have that emotion, because that's one of my favorite parts of the draft. You know, I've been watching this as a kid, and you see guys crying, you see guys like overwhelmed with emotion that you don't normally see. And I think it's really a positive sign that we need, especially given this current period where, you know, there's a lot of negativity, there's a lot of worry and anxiety, to see a whole night of joy with people achieving their dreams. I think it's going to be a joy for us as spectators.
We're talking to Cameron Wolf from ESPN. He covers the Dolphins for them. First of all, I did see a video you posted, I guess, a few weeks ago that you announced your own first-round pick. So congratulations to you and the wife on
thank you.
The upcoming baby. So very cool. I enjoyed your video. But I look at the Dolphins as they're not in win-now mode. They've gotten better. I think they have the right coach. They're building for the future. But did the game plan in your mind change at all when Brady announced he was leaving New England?
I think that it allowed teams in the AFC East, and particularly the Dolphins, to figure, hey, we might be able to get to where we want to go earlier than we thought. I think the Dolphins may have solved this as a three-year rebuild for them that started last year. And now they may be thinking, hey, we might be able to compete for a playoff spot next year and make it sort of a quick turnaround. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case, but I think the fact that division's wide open, the Patriots have been the bullies of that division. I think they've won 19 in the last 20 years. So I think for the AFC and the AFC East in particular, it creates a openness that, hey, maybe we can be that team that steps into that spot, particularly for the Dolphins, knowing that, hey, the Patriots have been – they've been number two to the Patriots for pretty much the whole decade. So I think you're going to see teams be more aggressive in that division. We already saw the Bills trade for Stephon Diggs. We're going to see what the Dolphins do tonight in the draft. They spent more money in free agency than any other team. So I think you're seeing teams say, hey, the Patriots are wounded. It's our time to jump on it and take advantage of that.
You said earlier that you really like the coaching in your dealings with Brian Flores. What is it that about him that makes him the right guy for this job?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when you see a guy that comes from the Patriot tree, you always are worried, because they don't have a lot of history of success. You're wondering, are these guys going to be a copycat of Bill Belichick? You know, are they going to, you know, have that same mentality? And he has some Patriot influence in him, but I think that he's also his own self. And what I mean by that is I think he's genuine in how he feels about players, how he has a respect for, you know, for reporters and just kind of day-to-day people, and I think you see that. I think he's relatable for a lot of his players. You know, he's a guy from Brooklyn that grew up in the inner city, you know, tough upbringing, had to fight for everything he got, you know, was a college football player, you know, started as a low-level scout making $20,000. So, like, I think a lot of the things about his history and how he goes about things allows him to earn a lot of respect from the people that are around him. And ultimately, I just think he's a good coach beyond that. You know, I saw instances last year where they were clearly the less talented team and they brought out a win, and I thought it was because of the coaching staff. I remember watching a game against Philadelphia last year, and that's a team that won the NFC East, and they came and they just flat out beat them, and they were no way more talented. But I think they outcoached them that day. And I think that was the first big sign where I was like, okay, the Dolphins may have something with this coach.
Do you feel like that the fan base has embraced him?
Yeah, I do. I do. I think that this fan base, you know, the two things they've been missing for the most, you know, really the last two decades has been a coach that they believe in and a quarterback they believe in. And they hope that they got the coach, and now they got to figure out if they're going to get the quarterback tonight. I think that, you know, he got a lot of respect from them and fans, you know, when he was committed not to tank. And there was a lot of fans who said, hey, tank for Tua, that's what we want. But I think the vast majority of them, even if that's what they truly want, they had a lot of respect for that their coach was not going to just lay down for anyone, even if it maybe made sense for the organization. They were going to fight. And I think that win over the Patriots that we mentioned earlier in the hit in Week 17 at Foxborough, that's something that hasn't happened for this franchise in a very long time. And they were like, man, this guy's doing it with this talent. And I think that made everybody, most of the fans, jump on board. So, you know, he's still going to have to prove himself this upcoming year with more talent, more expectations. But I think he has a lot of fans in the fan base, and he's definitely on the right path.
Last thing, Cameron, what was the mood down there from the fan base watching Tannehill and the Titans go to the AFC Championship game? What were they saying?
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of anxiety. You know, I came down there for the AFC Championship week. I spent a little time in Nashville and wrote a story on Tannehill. And I think that there was a mixed feeling, you know, from the fan base, you know, from what I understood. There was a lot of fans who felt like, man, you know, we really respected Tannehill. He did a lot of good work with them. You know, we wanted a new quarterback, but it's good to see him have success with the Titans. And then there was another part of the fan base that was going to throw dirt on him and say that Derrick Henry was carrying the team, and that was the only reason why he was doing well. So I think it was an interesting mix. I think that a lot of fans were not eager to see him come play in the Super Bowl in Miami, and they were happy that it didn't work out that way. But I think it was less about Tannehill, the person, and more about just kind of being in mediocrity as a franchise and not wanting to be wrong with another player. So I think Tannehill had a lot of respect from the fan base because he's a good guy. He was tough. They just wanted more from him as a player. So I think it was time for both sides to move on. And I think Tannehill's happy where he's at now. And I think Dolphins fans, as long as they get Tua tonight, will be happy with the path that they took as well.
Yeah, no doubt. We talked about it on that run. Could you imagine if Tannehill, the storyline, if Tannehill
right.
was playing in the Super Bowl in Miami, what that'll be like? Holy cow. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. Cameron, always good to talk to you. Congratulations again on the announcement. Enjoy covering the draft, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Appreciate you guys. Have a good one. Stay safe.
All right, you too. Cameron Wolf, NFL Nation reporter for the Dolphins for ESPN and ESPN.com. We will talk to Jim Wyatt at the bottom of the hour, find out what exactly is going on in Titans Central, John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. Come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. We thought Miami would have to basically lose out. It's pretty interesting, Cameron Wolf painting the picture of the Dolphins in the first 2 weeks, and they were awful. And they were trading away their best players, and it was like, you know, we talked about it even here. You know how many other markets were talking about it? Like, look what the Dolphins are doing, man. This team, if this isn't a tank job, come on. And that team just got better, as you just heard Cameron Wolf describe it. And by the end, pretty darn good. Brian Flores is a really good coach.
And they're probably going to end up with the quarterback that everybody wanted.
That's where I was getting at. That's exactly where I was going with this. And, you know, we thought it was going to take the number one pick to get their guy, which is Tua, and it may end up being the fifth pick that they still get their guy, right? Which the fortunes of the Dolphins for it to play out that way where 2, 3, and 4 don't need a quarterback and the guy that they wanted all along gets hurt and has a major injury, and because of the times that we're in, you can't get the true medicals, that now he gets to probably slide to them at 5, or maybe they have to move up a spot or two, but either way, they're going to get their guy.
Yeah, and that's the position they're in. They're in a very good position to move up if they want to, because they have those 3 first round picks. So right now they pick at 5, 18, and 26 is what I have. So I mean, I don't see them.
They're going to get a weapon, right? They're going to get a receiver. It's this draft is loaded with receivers, so they're going to get a receiver. If they get a quarterback, a receiver, and let's say an offensive lineman for your franchise quarterback, holy cow, 3 first-round picks. Think about how that could change a franchise.
Oh, it would. Yeah, it would change them completely. And that's
now
why
they have
I
to work,
asked.
Obviously. It has to work, but – you know, there have been some drafts where franchises were changed by a draft.
That's why I brought it up to Cameron about, you know, did the game plan change at all with Brady leaving? Because now the East is up for grabs. I mean, I think everybody agrees with that Buffalo, I would say New England is not out of it by any means. It depends on, I guess, what happens with Stidham. But I think Buffalo is in a better position right now than Miami, but you never know with what could happen tonight and over the course of the weekend that the Dolphins, you know, they could go for it. They could be in a better position. But with our mock draft that we did during the rundown, I said that I picked for Miami at 5, taking Tua. Jared then had 18 and 26. He went Justin Jefferson out of LSU, so there's the receiver, and then he went safety with Xavier McKinney at 26 overall. He basically said, best player available, I'm going Xavier McKinney.
I'm looking at – I've pulled up right now. Let's see how many I've got. 1, 2, 3, 4 mock drafts, national ones. And I've got the Athletic one for John Glennon and Joe Rexroad. Then I've got yours that I'm listening to, Chase. So that's a bunch of them. The one thing I've got, I mean, they are all over the place with this stuff. And, you know, we're talking about the Dolphins. Good luck figuring out what they're going to do, right, with 3 first-round picks. And, I you know, picking 29, that's for the Titans, trying to figure out how all of that's going to fall, all the uncertainty of what's going to happen by the time it gets to 29. I think the one thing that I feel like is there's enough good players here that – somebody that the Titans like is gonna fall to 29. I'm thinking more and more that they're gonna pick. I think I said 55% they pick at 29 yesterday. I might bump that up to 60%. I feel a little bit more like they'll make that pick. And I think they're gonna have a lot of options by the time it gets there.
I was looking at this draft they were doing on what is this, RotoWire. They were doing the all-time draft steals. So they did their mock draft of all-time draft steals. Do you know who was the number one pick overall?
For draft steals?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I don't know.
Brady, obviously, is a 6th-round pick, right?
Oh, okay. So all time.
Right. So like Tony Romo was drafted in the 2nd round. He was an undrafted guy.
Right.
Shannon Sharp was drafted in the 2nd round. Do you remember what round he was drafted in?
6 or was he like 6?
7th.
7th?
7th round, yeah.
That's what's crazy about Brady.
Everybody hopes they get one of those guys.
What's so crazy about Brady is I don't even think about that because of his career, but – I mean, he was 199, the 199th overall pick. And yeah, that totally has to be the greatest steal of all time.
Help me with this one, Willie, because I'm a little fuzzy. Bo Jackson went with the first pick in the 3rd round. how did that work?
Right. Bo Jackson,
because he was
the year
taken
he was
number
first
one
eligible.
Overall, right? By the
yeah,
Bucks.
Well, the first year, I think it was first overall. The Bucks had the first. I think they had the first pick, and they had the whole squabble, right? If you watch the 30 for 30 on Bo, the owner was. Bo just didn't like him, right? And he thought he was very disrespectful. I think Bo was telling him, hey, I'm really thinking about playing baseball. I don't remember all the details, but he basically said, you probably shouldn't pick me. You know, this is not going to happen. And the Bucks picked him anyway.
Yeah.
And he didn't play. He went to the Royals, signed the contract, was immediately thrown into Double A. And then the Raiders, I think the next year, just took a flyer.
Yes.
On him and just said, you know, what the heck? Maybe sometime he'll decide to play football. And sure enough, that's what happened.
Yeah, they took him in the seventh round. So just think about that. He qualifies for this because he was drafted number one overall, never played a down for the Bucks, and the Raiders, like you said, took a flyer on him the next year because he went and played baseball in the seventh round. And just saying, what the heck? You know, it's a seventh-round pick. And who knows? Maybe, he'll come around. And sure enough, you know, he qualifies as a seventh-round pick. And so that's why he was drafted with the first pick in the third round. But it was pretty cool just to see some of the names. You know, Antonio Brown is on here. He was drafted in the fifth round. Would Antonio Brown go in the sixth round? Is that right? I think that's right. Antonio Brown. It doesn't have
right.
on here. What they were drafted on. Just some of the stuff I'm just doing top of my head. I think Antonio Brown was sixth round.
That feels right.
I'm going to look it up. Let's see. Antonio Brown was a sixth round pick, yeah.
Yep.
By, of course, the Steelers. Sixth round pick. So he's on there. Some of these guys, you know, were undrafted. Antonio Gates is on here. Terrell Davis is on here. Roger Staubach and Bart Starr are on here. Just pretty cool to
see. I'll have to go look at that. You said it's RotoWire?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The all-time draft steals. And they did like a fantasy draft.
I will have to check.
That's cool.
That
yeah,
out.
It is. It's neat. It's you know, Dwight Clark's on here. Richard Dent is on here.
Are there any Titans that you see?
No.
Mm-mm.
Jamal
any.
Anderson. George Blanda's on there.
George Blanda.
Yeah.
Warren Moon.
Yeah.
Do they have undrafted guys?
Yeah. Tony Romo was drafted first pick in the second round.
So they have, if you were an undrafted free agent, you could be on this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool. You could probably do one of those with just undrafted free agents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the list is better than you think, right?
That's a pretty good list.
Yeah.
Antonio Gates, when was he drafted? I'm trying to remember, because remember we just talked about him yesterday, the Rivers Gates.
Antonio Gates was,
what round was he
taken
drafted?
In the undrafted.
That's what I was saying. Was he undrafted?
I was like, where is it? Oh,
yeah, because he was a basketball player at Kent State.
Yeah.
And I thought that he was undrafted. Just think about that guy. Undrafted.
Yeah. Antonio Gates played on a Kent State team that did really well in an NCAA tournament. He was an undrafted free agent. And I want to say the year before, and Darren, I think this was might have been the first year we were doing the night show by ourselves. It was that year because Mike Davis took Indiana all the way to the title game. They beat Kent State. And who was the coach at Kent State that got a huge deal? Stan Heath. He got a huge deal out of that run. And then he just, of course, I think he went to Arkansas and just did not do well.
Yep, didn't
at all. It was one of those cautionary tales of, you know, the guy that takes one team deep in the tournament, gets hot, and gets a big job out of it. Stan Heath made a lot of money, but he didn't win a lot of games after that. So he had to thank Antonio Gates. But, yeah, he was He was playing college basketball.
Was viewed as a tweener.
He went to Michigan State and then Eastern Michigan and then ended up at Kent State his junior and senior years. It doesn't say here. I was trying to figure out if he played football and basketball at Kent State.
I don't think I remember him playing football. I think he was just a basketball
player. Played
player.
Basketball, but not football in college.
Hence why he was undrafted.
He went to Michigan State. This is his wiki page. He went to Michigan State wanting to play football under Nick Saban, as well as basketball under Tom Izzo. Upon enrolling, he learned that Saban wanted him to play only football. Then he chose to pursue playing basketball by transferring to Eastern Michigan, played there part of a season before transferring to College of the Sequoias, a junior college in California, to focus on academics. And then he was recruited by Stan Heath, transferred to Kent State, and the rest is history.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow. 16 years in the NFL, and he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Wow. Undrafted. We'll come back. Jim Wyatt will join us. We'll kind of get the mindset of the Titans in the first round tonight with the 29th pick. We'll do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase on this Thursday. Jim Wyatt now on the line with us. Jimmy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Hope you guys are doing well.
You and the family well? Staying safe?
Everybody staying safe, yeah. Spend a lot of time at home. You know, from a work standpoint, it's not a whole lot different from me, just because the NFL offseason just kept on rolling with free agency and now the draft. And, you know, I've kind of gotten used to working at home over the years when I worked with the Tennesseans. So it's, for me, it's been nice to have people, my family back in the house and be able to spend more time with them while I've been able to work and get some stuff done. And hopefully people are staying safe and we'll be back to a point where people can get out again and enjoy the world. But, it's nice to have the draft to kind of change the conversation and to kind of give something for people to watch that's live and not the game that's 10, 20, 30 years old.
We've been watching the 2005 draft on ESPN2 this morning. You remember that draft?
That was the Pac-Man Jones draft. I do remember that draft well.
Yes, it was. It
I
was
think Mike
the
Vrabel
Man
makes
Johnson.
An appearance maybe during the telecast of that draft too. A young Mike Vrabel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at some point because they've shown that before, and I think about a week ago I saw that and he was on there. So keep on watching, and I think he makes an appearance at some point.
Well, you know who they've been showing the whole time in the first round, and it's still hard to watch. I remember the first go around watching it in 2005, but it's hard to watch even 15 years later. You know what draft this is. This is the Aaron Rodgers draft. And
yeah,
the uncomfortable Aaron Rodgers just sitting at the table waiting.
Yeah, I think,
and
I
waiting.
Think he got the last laugh on this one, though. And I
he
think
did.
He used that as maybe extra motivation for a little payback for all the teams that passed on him. You know, people always ask me about the one that got away, and I think if you're in that 2005 draft and you needed a quarterback in any fashion at all, you know, you look back at that, it's got to be a painful reminder of what could have been, because if the Titans take Aaron Rodgers there, they don't take Vince Young in 2006, they don't take Jake Locker in 2011, they don't take Marcus Mariota in 2015, and you're picking in other positions. But with all that said, you're probably not picking, you know, at 3 –8 and 2 either.
Gosh,
could you guys
think
imagine?
About that? Just think about what you just said. Oh my gosh, how different everything would have been
if he sat behind McNair for a year or two. I mean, if it played out like it did in Green Bay, where he sat. I mean, just think about that. That's crazy.
What do you think the reaction would have been? You were on the beat at that time. What do you think the reaction in this market would have been if the Titans would have pulled the trigger and drafted Aaron Rodgers, drafted a quarterback in 05?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly, obviously McNair was kind of near the end here. He ended up getting traded to the Ravens the following offseason. But it wasn't until really 2005, I guess, when he really showed signs of maybe not slowing down, because he had a little bit of a resurgence in Baltimore, but obviously had to deal with a lot of injuries during that season. Some people wouldn't have liked it, but I don't think a lot of people in Green Bay liked it, obviously, when they picked him, because they felt like they were in pretty good position. But when you make those decisions, you got to do it with the future in mind, and you got to give the Packers credit for being patient with him, and now their patience has paid off.
No doubt about it. So we've seen the setup. We saw John Robinson and Mike Vrabel speak via Zoom this week to the media, and John Robinson set up at his house. How do you think, what are we in for tonight in the next 3 days? We've never seen anything like this. How do you think this is all going to play out?
Well, hopefully it'll be a smooth process. And, I know John, has raved about IT department, with the Titans. And I know all those guys who do such a great job, and they've spent a lot of time getting him ready and getting other people ready for the weekend. And, they had a team practice run this, last week, and had another practice run throughout the league earlier in the week on Monday that I think, my understanding, had some glitches maybe at the start, but other than that, it went reasonably well. Hope everything goes smoothly, but I think I'd have to admit I'm a little bit skeptical that, you're trying this for the first time, that there's not going to be some hiccups along the way. Does that mean somebody's going to miss out on somebody that they wanted? I think I'd be surprised if the league let that happen, because that would be a nightmare for them to try to explain or talk a team down if they missed out on a player that they wanted because of some kind of a glitch in the process. Maybe there's a delay here or there as they work some things through. But I'm hoping it goes well. I mean, I'm hoping everything on my end goes well. I mean, I'm usually, first round of the draft, I've been there, since I've worked with the Titans, whether that was in, Chicago or Philadelphia or Dallas or Nashville last year. I was going to be in Vegas this year. And so this year, working the draft from home is going to be different. The bulk of the draft, I worked at the team facility, and that's where you had press conferences, and that's where you had that's where you kind of operated from. This year, when a guy is picked, we'll have to write the story, obviously, as fast as possible. We're going to have the player that's going to be on a conference call with media members right after that at some point at the end of the night, tonight and tomorrow night. Everybody will be on a Zoom call with John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, and you hope all that process goes well. But I know storms are in the area today, and hoping my DirecTV doesn't go out, and hoping my internet stays firing, and hoping I don't have any issues here, because I haven't had IT guys out at my house getting me set up. So you're talking to them, so hopefully it goes well. I think there's a greater chance of me having trouble than John Robinson.
Oh boy!
It's a really
Jimmy
good
Wyatt.
Point. We are. What are your thoughts on the storms?
What are your thoughts on the Titans pick? I don't know. The internet went down, so I couldn't tell you.
Yes, I've got a backup plan. I've got, I guess, my home Wi-Fi, but then I do have a backup, a couple of backup Wi-Fis that hopefully I can kick in if something goes wrong. But dropped the cat on my DirecTV not to go out, and hopefully that won't happen.
There was one year I think I missed the entire All-Star game, that midsummer night. There was one year. I think Roger Clemens was pitching in Houston. He was all excited. He was hosting everybody. He got drilled in the first inning. I don't think I saw anything. We lost power, or the DirecTV signal went out or something. And I just remember thinking, well, I just missed the All-Star game. Of course, on that night, you're desperate for things to watch. So this popped into my mind. But Jim, let's talk about the – I'm looking at all these different mock drafts. It looks like most of the picks that people are making center around defensive line, offensive line, and defensive back. If you had to guess, do you think it'll come from one of those three positions?
I think that's a good possibility. And I'm doing kind of a mock draft roundup that I'm going to put out here shortly. And I think, I'd agree that most of them are – D-line, O-line, cornerback, and then maybe edge rusher, too, is another one that that factors in. I would say I would, if I had to place a bet, I'd bet that that's one of those positions. But also, you know, there's a chance when you play some bets that you get to take the field, and wouldn't scoff at someone who took the field either away from those picks, because this team has some needs and outside of those positions. And if there's a great player there, somebody that slides to them, it wouldn't shock me if they went there with that first pick. And I mean, receiver is as much as I don't think that's a pressing need. It just depends on who's there. You know, the team needs a backup running back. You know, I don't know that I would take one at you know, at the first pick. But let's say Swift falls there, and I think you have to have a moment to pause and think about it, and then you potentially could move out of that slot and get somebody, you know, maybe at the top half of the second round, like getting an extra pick. So I think there's a whole bunch that's in play, and I think that's what makes this draft so interesting for the Titans is you know, so many areas that you could go in, and with the possibility of also moving out, which I think enhances the chances of taking a wild card pick.
The other thing that I have given some thought of, because it's going to be impossible for me. I don't follow the particular names like a lot of you guys do. But one thing that dawns on me with the position they're in each particular year, it seems like they're in a better spot in that they don't have so many holes to fill that they're desperate. You know, they can really be picky because they've done such a good job, I think, of constructing the roster. That does give you options. It gives you advantages, I would think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I look at the offense today on April 23rd, and I think you could almost name your 11 starters, and I'm counting Dennis Kelly at right tackle in that. But, you know, I think the team's in really good place on offense, and even on the defensive side of the ball. You know, yeah, you've got some holes you need to fill, but, you know, it's not like the cupboard's bare at any one position. They need depth in the secondary and need to get more dynamic getting after the quarterback. But I think that helps you. I mean, there's some drafts where, you know, you do these mock draft roundups, at least I do. And if I polled 50 mock drafts, I think you'd have probably 20 people picking the same guy just because they've been able to identify a position of need, or and then you're picking a player of need from there. I'm doing this year, and there's 20, you know, out of 50, there's 20 different players that are being mocked to the Titans. And I think that shows you that not only the wide variety of positions that they could go in, but also just, you know, a bunch of players there who might fit them better. And I do think John Robinson's done a good job of kind of constructing this roster where he has got, you know, some solid players up front, but now at a point you need some guys to add to it. And I think what also gives you optimism is you look at last year's draft class and you know, guys like Jeffrey Simmons, A.J. Brown, and Nate Davis, and, you know, David Long. You know, there's a bunch of guys who helped right out of the gate. And Monty Hooker's another one of them. I mean, so you can get production from your rookie class when you do it well.
Jim Wyatt is with us from TennesseeTitans.com. So if just looking at this, you said if you're a betting man, do you think that John Robinson picks tonight, or do you feel like that there's a chance he trades out, in just your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I had to bet, now, I think he'd like to move out of that pick and get an extra pick, and I certainly think it could happen, but I also know that sometimes, you know, you're not able to find what you're looking for as trade value. So I had to bet, I'd bet he picks at 29, but I also would bet that he's trying to move out and pick somewhere else. I just think that, you know, when you're considering what you're going to do there, you got to consider a lot of factors. I think one of them is, yeah, I think there's a chance that somebody he really likes might be there. Two, I think that you potentially could run into trouble finding trade value to get out of that spot. And because of that, I think I'd like my chances of sticking at 29 and picking.
The reason that I've leaned towards that he tries to trade out is I look at the fourth round and they don't have a fourth round pick. And I feel like that could be a good spot for them to find some of the positions of need, you know, whether it be a backup running back or something else. And so that's kind of why I've leaned that way. I don't know if you've looked at it like that he might want to try and get a fourth round pick, but that's my rationale.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt. I definitely agree with you there. I mean, when you look at the draft order and you see him picking at 93 in the third round and then not have another pick to 174 in the fifth, I can't imagine him being satisfied with going to bed on Friday night knowing you're not going to have a pick until deep in the fifth round. And I think general managers love to go to sleep and wake up the next morning and kind of feel – look at players and spots where you think you can start getting these, later round gems. And so I think he's definitely going to try to get that fourth round pick back. But I also think there's other ways you can do it that don't necessarily involve the 29th pick.
I really enjoyed the article you had on the website where you got to talk to Brad Hopkins and John Runyon and Chris Sanders and talk about their sons going through the draft process. How much fun was that for you to be able to do that?
It was great. I mean, just because you can tell just how proud those guys are. And I certainly remember them when I was first covering the team. I mean, writing a story like that makes me feel old because I remember when these guys were playing and I remember when their kids were a little bitty. And now here we are, their kids are getting ready to, take the step into the National Football League. So, it's just crazy just how much time passes. I think about my early days of covering the team and seeing some of these guys and now, seeing how they've grown into men and having families of their own and now having kids that they're giving advice to about how to handle the process. It's neat because all the guys I talked to, they're Brad Hopkins and Chris Sanders and John Runyon, three guys I have a lot of respect for. And, certainly rooting for their sons along with them. But, they all sent me pictures of, them with their kids when they were little bitty. I mean, carrying them around and having them at training camps and picking them up after games. And, it is crazy just to see how much time has passed. And, I know Blaine Bishop's son is heading off to college to play, coming up. And Eddie George has had a son that played in college, and there's so many guys, Lorenzo Neal, the same way. So all these guys from those early years are now seeing their sons do some good things, which is definitely neat to see. I appreciate you mentioning it.
Yeah, that was a good article. I enjoyed it too, and I know those quotes were real because that's when I read the quotes from those guys, especially Brad and especially Chris Sanders, I know that's exactly the way they talk. I mean, Chris is such a goofball in a lovable way that some of those quotes you had about him biting his fingernails, I mean, that is so Chris Sanders. So I know those were legit quotes. I was laughing as I was reading them. I enjoyed the article as well.
I wish I could have put audio with it because, he was kind of doing his impersonation to Jeff Fisher talking.
Yeah, he's so animated.
Yes, and was said he sounded like Barry White. You could hear his mustache through the phone. I got a kick out of that. I wish I could have play the audio of you hearing his Fisher impersonation. But it's funny, those guys had their draft nights and their draft weekends, and now here they are going to be a part of it as fathers. And every one of them said this is going to be a lot tougher, to deal with as a dad than it was as a player because you don't have any control at all in this process, no matter which side you're on, whether you're a dad or a son. But at least you want your kids to do well, and you don't want them to have any kind of disappointment. You want them to be put in the best position possible. So I know there's a lot of anxiety, from the fathers as well.
Last thing, any of your Vandy guys end up on the Titans?
Yeah, I think Keyshawn Vaughn's a great tandem fit with Derrick Henry just because he's fast and he catches the ball well out of the backfield and he can run through defenders as well. I like him. I think Kalijah Lipscomb is an interesting player along with Pinckney too. So, it'd be neat to see. You know, Kari Blasingame has done a great job since joining the team last year, and I think he'd love to have a teammate there alongside him.
Boy, it's going to be fun to watch. It's not Titans Online anymore, right? It's TennesseeTitans.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, TennesseeTitans.com. The website kind of looks the same, and everything's remained the same other than the name switch. So, it's been packed with draft coverage, and it's going to be a busy weekend too, because this is a busy night. Titans will be picking late tonight. Have a couple of picks tomorrow, and then it's going to be a flurry on Saturday with all these other picks. So it should be hopping with stories and videos and analysis, all kinds of draft content there.
Keep up the good work. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, you guys have a great weekend. Thank you.
All right, you too. That is Jim Wyatt. TennesseeTitans.com is where you can find his work, and they do have a ton of content. And I was going to bring that up, Chase. I'm glad you did. If you didn't read that article, I really enjoyed it. Just talking about Brad Hopkins and Chris Sanders and John Runyon and how, they're hoping that their sons get picked in the draft somewhere.
And I know Bryson has obviously gotten a lot of notoriety just because he's projected to, to go relatively high, maybe second round, potentially first. But, so we've talked a lot about Bryson Hopkins and had Brad on a few weeks ago. But C.J. Sanders and John Runyon Jr., going to be cool to see that next generation. And I know it's just I remember their dads. You remember their dads when they played. So it's neat.
Well, the quote's not so Chris Sanders. I mean, right?
Oh, it's perfect.
It's like so Chris Sanders. I was just laughing going, of course that's his quotes. And Willie, how many times did we play music trivia with Chris Sanders and he blurred out the name Barry White, right?
Yeah.
Hilarious. Hilarious. That was one of the funniest series of segments that we had, the Name That Tune with him that one season.
Classic.
He was killing us. He was so comically bad at getting. He could never get the right answer, but his answer would always make us burst out laughing.
Conway Twitty.
He knew it was dead wrong. He was way off base. But the one thing that I thought about when you guys were talking about that, I can vividly remember after practice, we would be doing those last hours of the show, Darren. Everybody was leaving, right? But they would let the kids run on the field.
Yep.
Right? The guys would be done. They'd be sweating like crazy. They'd take the pads off and stuff, but they would be standing out on the field, John Runyon and Brad Hopkins and all these guys, and their kids would be running around with a football and just doing whatever, right? So I can remember those kids for sure, and now here they are about to get picked in the draft, and it's been so much fun watching them grow up.
I can take it a step further. I remember when we had CJ in studio with us after he was in the movies, right? After he was a movie star when he was a kid.
That's right.
Yep.
I loved how Jim titled it, and it was taking a quote from B-Hop, "Now it's their turn." I think that was the perfect way to put it, and Brad said that in the article about, not only his son, but CJ and John. So that's going to be neat. We'll see where they all end up, but now their new chapter starts.
Brad was about 70 to 80 pounds heavier in those pictures than he is today.
Isn't it funny how offensive linemen and defensive linemen, when they retire, they lose a bunch of weight.
And I think Chris Sanders is bigger than when he played.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Skill players tend to gain weight. The linemen lose weight.
Well, I'm not saying that he gained weight. He probably just gained a lot more muscle.
Chris. Yeah.
I don't know if he's trying to catch up to his college roommate, Galloway.
Yeah.
Maybe he's trying to look like him when he played. Wasn't it Galloway? Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's right. Yeah, Joey Galloway.
Or no, wait a minute. Who was the other Ohio State? I'm thinking of Ohio State receiver. The one that everybody used to always kind of whispers of, is he juicing? Like, he's huge.
I don't know, but it says in the article his roommate was Joey Galloway, so you're right there.
Or is that
are you
David
talking about Boston?
David Boston is who I'm thinking of. Yeah, David Boston. Remember, everybody would always be like, somebody needs to test him.
Oh, yeah.
He's huge for a receiver.
I don't know. But
yeah, Willie's breaking up. This is what's in store maybe tonight.
Willie's practicing for the draft.
Yeah. All right, we'll come back. Hour number three just around the corner here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.